Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and in the studio with me today is Ken Thompson.
Hi, Bill, and hi to everyone.
And our guest today is Simon Williams, and we're speaking to Simon in Florida, USA, and we'll be talking to him about his book, Torn, the story of an undeserving wallaby drowning in a septic tank. In this book, as you might guess from the title, there's a lot of humour, there's a lot of commentary on the US, but most importantly for us, he does talk about international child abduction. I might mention Simon is a practising physical therapist, or a physiotherapist as we say here. He loves travel, photography, and is a big rugby fan. He moved to the USA 23 years ago and has produced a beautiful son called Noam. Simon, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, mate.
So, Simon, the first question I might ask you is, why did you write this book, Torn?
I've been writing for years, just emails, just, you know, scribbling things just to have a laugh at myself and just to get through part of the loneliness of living here in the States. And when I started writing emails, it would just amuse most of my mates back home in Australia, you know, my sense of humour, and that would sort of cheer me up a little bit. When my son was taken, I would probably started writing a little bit more frequently because that was all I had just to get my mind off the even more loneliness and the anxiety and everything that I was suffering because he was gone. And a lot of my friends said, you know, you're quite funny, you should put a book. And so I did, for as much as just, again, just fill up my days. And every night I would just sit at the computer for hours hoping to see my son on Skype or something would happen that I'd be able to know that I'd be able to get reunited with him. And it just a friend of mine said, you know what, maybe you should put something about your son being taken in there as a way of maybe getting some publicity. So that's how it sort of evolved from just being a book just to keep myself from going nuts every night to something that was funny to something that had a little bit about the element of my son being withheld in Brazil for 5 years.
Yes, reading the book, it does come through in a number of places, the pain that you're feeling with your son, Noam. And how long is it since he was abducted?
He was taken August of 2010 when she took him down to Brazil and said, you know what, I'm going for what was supposed to be 2 weeks. And then she sort of turned around and said, by the way, I've booked the flight for, you know, I'll be back in, you know, 3 weeks. And I said, no, just you can't just take off and told me you go for 2 weeks and then stay for a month or stay for 6 weeks and I never know when you're going to come back with my son. And she said, you know what, I'll go when I want, you know, for as long as I want. You've got no say in the matter. And she went down and I called up and said, please, don't do this. You need to. I'd like you to come back in 2 weeks. And she said, I'm not coming back at all. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
So how old is your son Noam now?
He's six, turned six in February.
Ken Thompson is here and he's got a lot of experience in this area of international child abduction. I'm sure he's got a lot of questions to ask you about Brazil and the Hague Convention and all these issues that come into play.
Firstly, I was really sorry to hear about your situation. I've been there myself and I know exactly what it's like. I was fortunate in that my son was located and returned to Australia. But I think your case became far more complicated because it involves Brazil. Anyone who has anything to do with these types of issues knows that Brazil's got a reputation for very low levels of compliance with the Hague Convention. Are you able to provide us a bit of an insight into what it's actually like to deal with the Brazilian judicial system?
You'll have me go right off the deep end. There's I don't quite know where to start, but it was, I've had experience everything from having a judge ordering my ex-wife to show me my son on Skype every night and her failing to comply and me calling up the judge and the judge basically saying, listen, I just write the rules, I don't have to have them enforced, and made me go, well, what's the point of that then? To having another judge refused to allow me any access to my son, and basically in one of his rulings saying there's of no benefit for this father to be involved with his son, simply on the basis that I wasn't Brazilian. He delayed my Hague Convention hearing for over a year, and then when it came time for him to organise the date, he told my legal team, I don't know what date, you know, I haven't got a date yet, but he told her legal team, come on the 10th of March. So her legal team showed up, and my legal team were like calling every day, when's the court appearance, when's the court date? We don't know yet. So I was unrepresented at the hearing, and of course I lost. I called up a lawyer who was working for the government side, on my side, so basically the American government and the Brazilian government negotiating for the child to be returned, mm-hmm. not sort of, you know, necessarily the parents.
Yep.
And he was on my team, and he basically told me, I don't really want your son to be coming back because of a famous case here, the Goldberg case. You've already taken, you know, one of our kids back. I'm going to do nothing to help you get your son back. And he was a member of my supposed legal support team helping me to get my son back.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, Brazil became a signatory, one of the first countries to actually become a signatory to the convention back in 1980. But I think in all that time, they've only returned two, perhaps three children out of the hundreds of children who've been abducted to that country. And Brazil certainly has a reputation for having incredibly strong bias towards Brazilian parents and for slowing down court procedures to the point where, at the end of the day, they just simply say, well, you know, under Article 12 of the convention, the child has become settled in this country and we now see no reason to return the child. And it sounds very much to me like that's exactly the situation you found yourself in.
Yes, the longer it went on, the more likely they will just fall back on that, oh, he's been here so long now, so no point. So a friend of a friend of a friend spoke with a lady who works for a university here who's involved with basically, you know, the Hague Convention and enforcement of it or negotiating with it. And when she heard that my son went to Brazil, she said, oh, you're better off just going and kidnapping your son to get him back. You'll never get him back legally. So that sort of sums up even if people who deal with the Hague Convention or who are involved with it, basically they don't even know. I know it's a joke when it comes to Brazil. So.
Which certainly doesn't make it any easier for you. It just makes it more difficult knowing that you're coming up against that kind of situation. What did you do to actually to cope with that when you realised that you were dealing with a country that behaves that way towards its international obligations?
I started going, really, and my family were, you just need to start preparing for the fact that he'll be 18. When he's 18, he'll decide on his own to come and, you know, seek you out and, you know, keep a blog, keep you know, writing letters, keep doing everything you can to, you know, put money in the bank for him. My parents have put money in the bank in Australia to show him, hey, we felt that I walked away from you, it's not that I forgot about you. It was every email, everything, I kept a record of everything to be able to show him, here's what I did, here's the point where I said, it's, I'm just wasting my money and my time, so I'll slow down a little bit, but I never forgot about you. That's what I was preparing to do. Because I realised, yeah, doing it legally, I had the choice. I mean, I'll be honest. I was in Costa Rica on a rugby tour, and I spoke with a guy down there who was a security expert, and he said, you know what? Speak to a few friends. We'll put together a team, tell you how much it's going to cost, and we'll go down and get it out for you. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that's probably the better way of, you know, it's a more certainly a more effective way, because doing it legally with Brazil was a waste of time.
And we're speaking with Simon Williams, the author of Torn, the story of an undeserving wallaby drowning in a septic tank. We're going to have a short break now, and this is a song by Doug Ashdown called Winter in America.
The harbor's misty in the morning low, oh how I miss December. The frangipani opens up to kiss the salty air. I know you're getting ready for the office. I suppose he's still there with you, sharing our morning song. Winter in America is cold, and I just keep growing older.
I wish I could have known enough of love to leave love enough alone. I've learned something of love I wish I'd known before you left me. But it's funny how you don't know what you've got until it's gone. And I hope you're getting all the love you've ever wanted. But I wish I was there with you, sharing our morning sun. I waken to the sadness of the rain, making love to strangers, and wishing I had known enough of love to leave love enough alone.
Winter in America is cold, and I just keep growing older. I wish I could have known enough of love to leave love enough alone. Winter in America is cold, and I just keep growing older.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And that was Winter in America by Doug Ashdown, and we're speaking with Simon Williams, the author of Torn, the story of an undeserving wallaby drowning in a septic tank. So, Simon, you were just telling us you were contemplating taking direct action to get your boy back. You decided against that?
I knew my parents and probably most of my friends in Australia would never support me or never look at me again if I did it. So it was something that just you have a couple of moments of, you know, I'm desperate to see my son, I'm desperate to be a part of his life. It's one of those things that just you think about. And eventually, I ended up coming up with another, much simpler way of achieving. It eventually resulted in me getting some contact with my son. But, you know, I can imagine any dad. I might bounce around a little bit. There was a journalist in Australia that got kidnapped in Africa and was held for 12 months, and his family finally negotiated to have him paid money to the kidnappers and have him sent back. He sent me an email telling me, mate, here's you know, a way of here's the group that were going to go in to get me out. I had lots of people through various ways that were contacting me saying, you know what, here's a way of being able to do it, to get me back. But in the end, I knew I couldn't do it. I was going to end up having to wait it out to get it back. My parents would never speak to me if I did the same thing that she did and just took him away.
You touched on the Goldman case, which is quite a famous case. Sean Goldman, who was taken to Brazil, held in Brazil, the mother refused to return the child. She remarried, subsequently died in childbirth, and then the man she married was able to get custody of Sean, and again refused to return him. Now that case attracted enormous national and international media attention, and eventually reached the highest levels of the US government. Now, the US government eventually, through Congress, blocked trade deals that were worth billions and billions of dollars to Brazil. And within a couple of days of that decision being made, Sean was returned to the US, where he now lives with his father. And it was really interesting to hear you say that rather than having a long-term effect on Brazil in causing them to increase their compliance with the Hague Convention, it seems to have had the opposite effect. They now seem to be saying, well, as you said, you know, you've got one of our children back, you're not going to get any more. That's quite an amazing outcome.
Mate, I've got a mate from high school who's a member of parliament in Australia, contacted him, and he said, let me speak to the Brazilian consulate in Australia just to find out the situation. I've still got the email, and the response from the consulate was, we have him. Bugger off. Once he's in Brazil, he's ours. Too bad. That's their attitude. That's their country's attitude. And, I mean, it's something that anyone would have to sort of appreciate, it's not just simply a case of, you know, as I sort of said, if I went and stole him back, my parents would disown me and they'd be furious. That for someone to be able to do this, you have to have the support of your family, your friends and neighbours, anyone else who's going to sit there and say, oh, you know, we understand what you've done, but we'll give you all the help you need to be able to continue it on. It's not something just one person can do on their own. And so it's sort of like a rather endemic slap in the face of society when so many people are willing to support someone to do that, because that's the only way they can get away with it.
Yeah, that, again, talking about support. Now, you know, Sean Goldman and his father, David, were able to obtain the support of the US government. And as a result of the outcome of that case, the US government introduced the what's known in the short term as the Sean Goldman Act, or the Goldman Act. And that raises the question, did you approach the State Department and talk to them about the Goldman Act and about how they could use that to help increase pressure on Brazil to have your child returned?
Mate, again, you'll have me go off the deep end if you want me to talk about the US State Department.
I think it's important because it is a big issue, and I know I'm in contact with other parents whose children have been taken to countries like Japan, and the Goldman Act they saw as a way forward, a light at the end of the tunnel. But there was an article published in today's Washington Post that shows that the US government isn't using the powers that it has available to it to enable parents who are in situations like you are and the children to be returned to the US. And I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts, and I think our listeners would as well, about that piece of legislation and how it appears to not being used in the way that it could be used.
I'm on the Sean Goldman Bring Sean Home website and have been for several years. And Sean actually gave me a call one day and sort of, you know, left a message, keep up the fight and good luck. And I've sort of had some help from some of the people on the website and been in contact with some other parents in the same situation, one of whom has won his hate case in Brazil to get his daughter back, and his daughter is still there a year and a half after he's actually won the case. And so the whole, for me, just bluntly, it doesn't matter what any government writes in the law or what any lawyer says, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, a single person can sit there and say, I'm not giving my kid back, and to me, no one will end up doing anything about it. And you can write as many laws as you want. None of it matters. I don't know whether I've actually back and able to see my son again now, and the only reason that happened is because I went down to Brazil and I stood outside his school with a picture of him and basically told every parent and every kid that's coming to the school. I found out I got a friend to go and bribe the doorman of the building to find out where his school was. And I did a little bit of research and found it. And I stood outside the school and basically showed him a picture saying, this little boy was abducted by this woman. He goes to the school here. Knowing full well that every kid in the school would then walk up to my son and say, hey, I didn't know you were abducted, you know, but do you know this? And so he would then start asking questions of his mother. The parents would then start asking questions of her. And as she told me a week ago, when I was down there seeing my son again, you made my life so bad after you did that. And all I could say was, you know what, it got me back in my son's life. I do not care.
Yeah, I guess I still can't understand, and I think a lot of people can't understand why the US government is not using the powers that it has available to it when it used these powers to have to obtain.
It comes down to, oh, we want a trade deal or we don't want a trade deal. We want their oil or we don't want their oil. It comes down to nothing to do with the, they can use it if they want to use it. They won't use it if they want to use it. Mm. You may not be aware that there was a politician in California that his grandchildren were abducted to Mexico. Mexico as well is terrible at returning kids, and there are more kids in Mexico than there are in Brazil or any other country.
Yeah, that's right.
Stolen
from
the States. None of them ever get returned. However, the moment they found this woman in Mexico, boom, she was extradited. The kids were back in the States within a day, simply because that guy was a politician. And all the other parents I know a guy who has his son in Mexico. The State Department, government won't do squat to help him. They really don't care. It's something that they can use as an election platform if they say, I helped this person, I tried to do something. But really, in the end, no one cares apart from maybe the parents or someone else who's in that situation. It's an issue that is an absolute non-issue to politicians, non-issue to governments on both sides of the fence. No one cares about a single little kid apart from the left-behind parent who desperately just wants to be back with their kid again. That's what I've learned from this experience. No one was ever really going to help me unless I got off my ass and did something myself.
Yeah, I think that's a general feeling amongst left behind parents, that at the end of the day it comes down to diplomatic relationships between the countries and trade deals. And if they want to, you know, compromise a trade deal to get a child back, they can do it easily. But the experience shows that they rarely go down that path.
It happened with Goldman because he got some publicity and was on, you know, the TV shows. Even my judge here in my divorce case said, the only way you'll get your son back, I can tell you, you need publicity, you need contact at a few TV stations, radio stations. It's old news. The Goldman case was the one-off. We don't really want to touch this anymore. So then when my friend at the ABC said, maybe put something in your book about it, maybe I can, you know, help you get some publicity in Australia. And I thought maybe this could be the only chance I've got. So that's why I sort of even put anything about my son or even published the book, was to think maybe this could in some way help a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in what you say. Once you get the media on side, that starts to form or influence public opinion.
If you don't have that, you're dead in the water.
Yeah, I agree.
No one cares.
I think that's
it. So it becomes an issue, and then people are more interested in the shark attacking a surfer or something else the next week. So you have one shot to get it out there and get some traction. If you miss it, then you'll be this way waiting again until the child is 18 and hopefully it comes involved.
And I think that's a very important point to get across to other parents who are in the same situation that you are.
It's a lottery, and you know, I was just so lucky in the end. But I was in the end. I thought about, man, I was on a bus. I found out where his school was. Like, just stood there and thought, what do I do now? And I thought, okay, nothing I can do. Got on the bus, was leaving, and I thought, hell no, go back and stand outside the front of the school and tell everybody that my son is there. And I just wanted to just tell him his dad was here and he loves him. That was my intention. And then, you know, quite ironically, that me getting off the bus and walking all the way back to the school was probably the only reason I'm seeing my son again now.
I'm impressed with your resilience and your love of your child, obviously, Simon, and it's definitely not a case that you talk about of just hardening up and moving on. You fought for your child, and, you know, thank goodness you are now having some contact with him. I feel we've only just scratched the surface here on this topic, but we've run out of time. I asked you, Simon, if you could pick a song for us to go out on. Could you tell us which song you picked and why?
Peter Gabriel. This was Salisbury Hill.
Salisbury Hill, and there's a line in it that says, son, he said, grab your things, I've come to take you home. It's a great line.
Yeah, the song used to bug me when I was at boarding school back in grade 5. I used to cry every time I heard it because I was missing my dad. And so that was the song I chose because it was when I left Brazil a week ago, I started to cry when I was leaving my son and said goodbye, and he sat down and started playing with his Lego and he sort of said bye, Dad. He didn't cry, and I walked out to the elevator and was standing for the elevator doors to close, and suddenly he ran into the elevator crying and gave me a big hug and said, bye, Dad, I'll see you soon, and walked off. That's what that song, you know, that line means to me is, you know, one day I can't go back and take him away, I'll keep travelling to Brazil, you know, as often as I can to see him, just so that he knows that his dad loves him.
Well, it's good that you're seeing him, and I'm sure that he really appreciates what you're doing, and he'll appreciate it in years to come as well.
And Simon, this has obviously been very emotional for you. Thank you very much for being on the program. We're going to go out with this song now from Peter Gabriel.
Imagination, my heart going. to keep in silence, I resigned. My friends will think I was a nut, turning water into wine. Open doors would soon be shut. So I went from day to day. My life was in a rut, till I thought of what I'd say, which connection I should cut. I was feeling part of the scenery. I walked right out of the machinery. My heart going boom, boom, boom. Hey, he said, grab your things, I'm gonna take you home. Hey, back home.
It just remains for me now to particularly thank our special guest today, Simon Williams, the author of Torn, the story of an undeserving wallaby drowning in a septic tank. Simon, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks very much.
And
thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Simon. And we'll be back next week with another program. And don't forget to listen to this show again or any of our shows. Go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au.